Support for today's show comes from Somersault Swimwear. Crafted with 5 times the strength and 4 times the compression of an average swimsuit, Somersault offers designer quality without the designer price tag. And its data-backed fit is based on 1.5 million body measurements taken from 10,000 women, so it's designed to fit you and not the other way around. See why editors of Elle, Glamour, Refinery29, Forbes, and many more all love Somersault. Get $10 towards your purchase using the code JUNKIE at Somersault.com. That's SUMMERSALT.com. At 1:56 a.m. on Saturday, November 16th, 2014, Akron Patrol Officer David Crockett responded to the call of a bar fight at a local bar in Akron, Ohio, called Papa Don's. While he was on his way there, lights and sirens activated, an update came through the dispatch. The situation was now a Signal 21, meaning an officer's life was in danger and help was needed immediately. An officer was down. Officer Crockett was the first responder to arrive. He pulled into the parking lot and saw a small group of people hovered over a man on the ground. He recognized the man as Justin Weinbrenner, a fellow police officer who normally worked the night shift with him, but who had been off duty that night. Justin was lying on his back. His eyes were open, but he wasn't conscious. EMS was pulling up, and so Officer Crockett ran over to direct them to where Justin was. As the paramedics tended to Justin, Officer Crockett tried to assess the scene. It was chaotic. He went around asking any possible witnesses for a description of the shooter, and he was trying to see if anyone else was hurt. He was told that there were other people who had been shot and who were injured, still inside the bar. Someone handed him a pair of black glasses and said they were the shooters, and he was able to gather a basic description of the shooter, a black male, dark clothing, who had run off in an unknown direction. He continuously radioed to the other officers on their way any and all updates he was getting. Officer Crockett entered the bar and immediately noticed the blood, leading all the way from the doorway to the back kitchen area. There were shell casings by the front door. By that time, other officers and additional EMS had shown up. A man approached him and told him that he had found the gun in the parking lot and had put it in a nearby dumpster so no one else would touch it. Officer Crockett ran over to the dumpster, and sure enough, there was a .40 caliber pistol inside. He directed another officer to stand guard over it. He then grabbed Tiffany Miller, the manager and owner's daughter, who had been outside with Justin, and told her that he needed to look at the bar's surveillance video right away. The shooter was still at large, and at this point, could be anywhere. Tiffany pulled the video, and Officer Crockett watched as an altercation unfolded just inside the bar. It appeared as though a scuffle had taken place, shots had rung out, and then the shooter ran out into the parking lot before heading east on foot. He immediately dispatched that out. It was now 2:10 a.m. Meanwhile, Officer Jeff Edsall with the canine unit was walking his dog, Bronson, around the outside of the bar, trying to pick up a fresh human scent. As he headed eastbound on Market Street, Bronson indicated that he found one, so Officer Edsall radioed that out to his fellow officers. They were heading east. They continued down the street and then went northeast, down a rocky hill. The terrain was so steep and jagged that Officer Edsall fell about 15 times, but he continued on because that's where Bronson was leading them. They approached a field and Officer Edsall had his gun out with his flashlight illuminated. Other officers had joined him and they were all combing through the field. A police cruiser, driven by Detective Todd Sinsley, was driving slowly alongside the road, shining its spotlight through the tall brush. Detective Sinsley spotted an object. At first, he thought it might be a bag and got out of his car. As he got about 40 yards away, he could see a man's head pop up and then quickly duck back down. He radioed to Officer Edsall. "Edsall, stop where you're at. There's someone right to the right of you." Officer Edsall spotted the man. He was lying face down, completely stretched out and flat against the ground. Officer Edsall began shouting for whoever it was to show him his hands, but the man didn't move. The other officers had gathered around at this point too, all of them shouting, telling the man to put his hands where they could see them, but the man didn't move. After three demands, Officer Edsall gave his dog Bronson the command to apprehend. Bronson ran over and started biting the man in the leg. The man still didn't move. Bronson held on to the man's lower right leg as the officers surrounded him and secured him. Officer Edsall got on the radio and told everyone that they had apprehended the suspect and needed EMS to treat a dog bite. They had captured the shooter. This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 67. ...32-year-old Justin Weinbrenner, the man who had been lying on the ground when Officer Crockett had first arrived at the scene, was transported to the hospital, but passed away later that night. He had been shot 2 times in the torso. Justin was a police officer with the Akron Police Department. He had been off duty that night, just a patron enjoying a night out with friends at Papa Don's, a local bar that was owned by his fiance, Tiffany Miller's family. Justin had been with the Akron Police Department for 7 years, and by all accounts was a very well-liked officer. He and Tiffany had been planning their upcoming wedding at the time he died, and he also had a 4-year-old daughter. There were 4 other shooting victims that night, too. One man was placed on life support for 3 days before eventually making a full recovery, and the others faced serious injuries as well. The shooter was 35-year-old Keenan Ivory, who lived about 2 miles away from Papa Don's. Keenan lived with his girlfriend, who he had been with for nearly 15 years, and he had 2 children, boys who were 11 and 12 years old at the time of the shooting. And now Keenan was charged with 15 counts in all, including aggravated murder and 2 counts of attempted murder. If convicted of aggravated murder, he would then be facing the death penalty. At his trial, no one disputed that Keenan was the shooter, but the prosecution and defense had very different accounts of what they say happened that night, both pointing to the surveillance video from inside the bar as proof of their case. First up, Assistant Summit County Prosecutor Jonathan Bommel.
On the morning of November 16th of last year, 2014, at Papa Don's Pub, you just had an opportunity to see the defendant, Keenan Ivory, return. He returned to Papa Don's. He returned to Papa Don's after being kicked out. He returned to confront those who, in his mind, had disrespected him. And he returned with that loaded .40 caliber hand.
He said Keenan came back to the bar at 1:53 a.m., armed with a handgun, after having been kicked out just minutes before. He said at 1:53, the bar was still in business, and patrons were still there. One of the patrons was off-duty officer Justin Weinbrenner, who Bommel said knew the circumstances of Keenan's return to the bar and was agitated. Bommel told the jury that shortly after Keenan entered the bar that second time, Justin became aware that he had a handgun tucked in his waistband. He and another patron engaged in a heroic act of getting Keenan out of the bar and keeping the people inside the bar safe. They were successful and got him out of the bar just in time. But Keenan was able to get his gun out and fire 4 times. 2 of the bullets struck Justin, and he died as a result. Bommel said that Justin frequented Papa Don's whenever he could, so he could help his fiancée, Tiffany, who ran the bar, and also went there to hang out with friends. Many off-duty police officers often hung out there, too. That night, on November 15th, 2014, Keenan Ivory arrived before 12:30 and sat at the bar. He had been there before, about a handful of times. He usually kept to himself and never caused problems. But this night, he was acting different. He was very extroverted, engaging in conversations, hitting on girls, and was being very talkative to people he didn't know. Bommel told the jury that the first bit of problems started with a woman named Anne Marie, who was a regular at the bar and a friend of Tiffany's. Keenan started aggressively hitting on her, and it made Anne Marie uncomfortable. She told Tiffany about it, and Tiffany asked Keenan to leave. Keenan was defiant and upset. But he eventually paid his bill, got up, and started walking out. But before he left, he stopped over to Justin, who was sitting at the bar, and gave him an earful. Justin ignored him, and Keenan left. But Keenan wasn't going to let it go. About 4 or 5 minutes later, he returned. He wanted his revenge, Bommel said. He was angry at being rejected, angry at Tiffany, angry at everyone at the bar. When he pulled up in his car, he put a gun into his right waistband and walked inside. When he walked in, another regular patron named Dave Wocati, also known as Big Dave, was standing there with Tiffany and Anne Marie. An argument started, and Bommel said that Keenan looked down and touched his gun at his waistband several times. Tiffany saw the gun and told Justin, since he was a police officer. Justin and another man approached Keenan too. Keenan drew his gun, there was a scuffle, and the movement went towards the front door. But just steps before the door, Keenan fired the first shot, which hit three people: Dave Wocati, his girlfriend Jennifer, and a man named Thomas Russell. As they chased him out of the bar, Keenan continued firing his gun. Justin was hit by two bullets, but before he collapsed, he was able to knock the gun away. Keenan then took off running down the street. Bommel told the jury that they will hear from multiple witnesses who either witnessed what happened or who were struck by a bullet. The surveillance video was then played for what would be the first of many times during the trial. On the video, at 1:53 a.m., Keenan can be seen walking into the bar. He goes to the left and is immediately approached by a large man, identified as Big Dave Wocati. Then Tiffany steps between the two men. Keenan takes a few steps back with his hands up. He then can be seen repeatedly lifting up his shirt and looking down at his right waistband. Tiffany then walks over to Justin, and a short time later, Justin walks over there too. Another man, identified as David Eisel, leaves his spot at the bar around that same time and approaches Keenan too. There is then a ton of movement, with Keenan going backwards out of the bar and the other three men going forwards. Shots then ring out and people in the bar scramble for cover. When the defense gave their opening statement, they had a very different version of events. Keenan's attorney, John Grieven, told the jury that the video surveillance in this case is important. He admitted that the case is not a whodunit.
Keenan Ivory is the person that should be sitting in this chair. You're never going to hear any evidence that says he was in another place, in another state, in another country, or any kind of thing like that. This is not a whodunit. This case is, and what the ultimate question will become, and frankly, the ultimate question that each of you will have to decide is, what did he do? Did he commit aggravated murder with prior calculation and design? Did he commit murder? Did he purposely have a specific intent to kill someone? Did he commit manslaughter? Or frankly, did he act this night in self-defense? That is what you ultimately have to decide when you take in all the evidence.
He said the state and the defense do agree on a lot of facts of the case. He said Tiffany did tell Keenan to leave the bar, even though she didn't know the situation of what had happened. Keenan didn't agree with her because he didn't think he did anything wrong, but there was no anger or revenge. He was not thrown out of the bar or escorted out of the bar. He walked out. And Grieven told the jury that this next detail is important. Keenan had chicken wings at the bar. Once Tiffany kicks him out, she tells him to pay his bill and says that she'll get him a to-go box for his wings. But Keenan leaves his chicken wings there. He gets about 3 minutes away and realizes he left his food, so he turns around and goes back to get it. Greven said the prosecutor uses words like revenge, but that as you'll see on the video, Keenan doesn't walk in the door firing his gun or seeking out anyone to hurt. He walks in and goes directly towards where he had left his wings, where he had been sitting. He is then confronted by Dave Wolcotti, Big Dave, who weighs about 400 pounds. And Big Dave is intoxicated, Greven said. In fact, many of the people involved in this were intoxicated, except for Keenan. He had been drinking, but his blood alcohol level wasn't past the legal limit, like the others.
Keenan Ivory walks into the bar. He is immediately confronted by a 400-pound, intoxicated, speech-slurring person who comes up to him. You'll see. Everything that we say to you, you're going to see. But this giant of a man comes up to him and says, "What are you doing here? Get out of here, or I will kick your black ass." That is what David Buchanan says to Keenan Ivory. Now, does Keenan Ivory pull out his gun and start shooting people? No. Okay? You will see in the video tape, when he is first confronted, he steps back. And it's very loud in this bar. And you'll hear the music mainly. But you'll be able to hear Keenan Ivory saying, "Bro, bro, 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 bro." He steps back. He puts his hand up, as if to say, "Just let me get my wings and get out of here." And frankly, if David Wolcotti would have taken a step back and let Keenan Ivory walk to where he thought his wings were, we wouldn't be here today. But he didn't. He is threatening to kick his ass.
He said Keenan had a gun in his waistband, which he had there the entire night. Keenan often carried a gun for protection. He was the victim of violent crimes, and his brother had been murdered a couple years ago. Keenan didn't want any trouble, but Big Dave continued to threaten him. Then Justin approached him, and then another man, David Eisel. So now Keenan has Big Dave in front of him, Justin on his left, and David Eisel on his right, where his gun is. He is now surrounded by three people with the wall behind him. But even at this point, he doesn't pull out his gun. The gun eventually comes out only when Justin and David Eisel put their hands on Keenan. Keenan believes that David Eisel is reaching for his gun. He's scared. 900 pounds of intoxicated men coming at him. His gun comes out, but he doesn't pull it out and aim it at anyone. As he's getting pushed and knocked back on his ass, the gun starts firing randomly. "It's tragic," Greven said, "but it doesn't change factually what happened here." He encouraged the jury to watch the video and said, "You'll have to decide what, frankly, if anything, he is guilty of." Tiffany Miller was the first witness for the state. She said she opened Papa Don's Pub in January 2011 with her parents. It was a family establishment and a sports bar and grill. She said they were known for their good food and that a lot of people from the community came out. She first met Justin while she was bartending in 2005 and he was working security. They kept in touch over the years. Justin became a police officer in 2007 with the Akron Police Department. After Papa Don's opened, they hired Akron police officers to work security on the weekends, and Justin and his partner started working there. She said Justin became familiar with a lot of their patrons. He was always calm and always wanted to make sure that everyone had a good time and that there were no confrontations. She said their policy with unruly customers was to never make anyone feel uncomfortable. If they had to leave, she said you want them to be able to come back at a later time. She said they always tried to address each situation personally and to not involve anyone else. Their goal was always to de-escalate any situation. She never saw Justin ever physically have to remove anyone from the bar. He would usually talk to them off-premise without disrupting anyone inside the business. She and Justin then started dating, and then off-duty police officers would regularly start to come in. On the night of Saturday, November 15th, 2014, she and Justin went to a fundraiser for a local youth football team. She hadn't expected Justin to be able to go with her that night. He had gone deer hunting and was due back later that night. But he called her earlier in the day and said he had been successful in shooting a deer, and so he was coming home early. At the fundraiser, she said she remembers seeing Keenan there. She didn't know his name, but she recognized him from Papa Don's. She said he nodded at her when he saw her, and she may have nodded back, but doesn't remember. After the fundraiser, she and Justin went to another bar downtown to see some of Justin's friends play in a band. They were there for a couple hours and then went to Papa Don's. They had some friends who were there, so they were stopping by on their way home. She said they got there just after 1 a.m. At one point, her friend Anne Marie approached her and told her that someone in the bar had been making comments that had made her feel uncomfortable. She seemed pretty upset and said the comments were offensive to her. Tiffany asked Anne Marie to point him out, but before she could even do that, Keenan approached them.
He's yelling. He's angry. He was loud.
Who is he angry at?
It appears to be at her at that time, at Anne Marie at that time.
And you are right there as well with Anne Marie?
Yes.
And does he come up to you?
Yes. He gets very close, at which point I raise my hands up.
Wait, he gets very close
to me.
To you, okay.
At which point I raise my hands up to give myself some distance between he and I.
And what do you say?
Between Keenan and I.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you. And when you say you raise your hands up, what do you mean by that?
I lifted them to space, some kind of place between us, between Keenan and myself.
And for the record, because for her can't take down what you do with your hands, you lift
right,
them up.
I lifted my hands up, palms out.
Kind of in front of your chest area?
In front of my chest.
Okay. And what happened?
He asked me to stop pushing him. Keenan asked me to stop pushing him.
Okay. Had you pushed him?
No. Keenan had leaned into my hands.
She said several people witnessed the confrontation. She asked him to calmly move to the end of the bar to try and resolve the situation with her. She wasn't clear on what exactly the issue was, but she didn't want it to escalate. They walked to the back of the bar. She said when it became clear to her that he wasn't going to calm down, she asked him to politely leave for the night. She told him maybe he had too much to drink and maybe it was time to go. She said he then became angry at her. He was trying to argue that Anne Marie wasn't right with what she was saying, that he shouldn't have to leave, that he didn't do anything wrong. He kept repeating himself over and over, she said. At one point, Justin came over and asked if she was okay. She told him, "Yes, babe, I'll be right over." She said she didn't want Keenan to feel like there was more than just her asking him to leave. So Justin then went back to sit at the bar. Her barback Jeff then came over too and asked if she was okay and needed anything. She told him she was fine and he left too. She said she told Keenan that they had had a great evening to help raise money for a good cause, which Keenan's son was a part of. She said she hoped they could end the evening on a good note and didn't have any problems. Keenan responded to that by saying that he doesn't need cops or anyone else to pay for his kid. His son was on the youth football team that the fundraiser was for. Tiffany told the bartender to please bring Keenan his check. Keenan told her that he had food there that he hadn't eaten yet, so she told the bartender to get him a to-go box so he could take it with him. Keenan pulled out a very large wad of money from his pocket. He was still angry, but he offered to buy her a drink and resolve the situation, but she declined and told him that it was time to pay his bill and leave. She walked towards the door to ensure that he was going to leave and to make sure there weren't any problems as he was going. She said he then left on his own accord and that no one physically forced him out. At no time during their conversation did he reference a gun, nor did she see one. She said when he left, she was relieved to have resolved the issue, but she said it didn't stand out to her as something that was a real problem. She had been in similar situations like that before. Tiffany told the jury how just minutes later, she saw Keenan enter the bar again. She immediately approached him and told him to leave, and he told her, "I'm not alone anymore." She said she was confused by that because she didn't see anyone with him. She said he didn't look angry, but appeared to be on a mission. Dave Wocati then approached them and also told Keenan to leave. She said Keenan then showed her the barrel of a gun he had in his waistband. When she saw that, she went over to Justin and told him that Keenan had a gun. She told the court, "That's what he does, protect and serve. He's the one I look to for help in any situation." Tiffany cried as the surveillance video was played in court. Justin went over to Keenan and Big Dave, and Tiffany said she didn't see everything after that. She heard gunshots and dove underneath a table to take cover. After the shooting, she saw Big Dave, who was bleeding on the floor. She went over to him, but a bar employee then approached her and told her that she needed to come outside. She said she could tell by the look on the employee's face that something had happened to Justin. She went to the parking lot and saw Justin lying on the ground. She got on the ground next to him and saw that he wasn't moving. She told him that she loved him and that he had saved her life. She told him to stay strong for his daughter and that help was on the way. She went to the hospital, and the police chaplain told her that Justin had passed away. Anne-Marie Cusio testified that she used to work at Papa Don's as a bartender, but had stopped working there after her mom passed away. She still went there regularly, however, with her boyfriend, Ravon. On the night of November 15, 2014, she and Ravon got to Papa Don's at about 11:30. She said she kept going back and forth between their table and the back of the bar, where there's a smoking area. At one point, she headed over to the other side of the bar to talk to some friends of hers who were also there. And that's when she encountered Keenan.
We were all just sitting there hanging out, talking, and I happened to, I believe we were going to try to order, we were just going to order drinks. And when I looked over, this person sitting right here was very aggressive at trying to get my attention to come over and talk to him.
She identified Keenan in court as the man who was being aggressive. She said she had never seen or interacted with him before. He then said something to her that she didn't understand at the time, but would come to realize what he meant later.
What type of things was he saying?
He just kept wanting me to come over there and talk to him. And I explained, I was like, "No, I'm cool." I said I had a boyfriend. He just kept saying, "Come over here." And I then pointed at my boyfriend and I was like, "He's standing right over there." And that's when he kind of got up out of his seat a little bit and he said, "I don't care, I have a 40.
And when he said, "I have a 40, what did you believe he was referring to? Or did you know?
We were in a bar. I'm assuming beer. I had no clue what he was talking about.
At that point, she said she was creeped out. So she walked behind the bar instead of having to pass him to go to her seat. She went over to her boyfriend and told him what happened. She told him that he was being really aggressive and she was feeling nervous. She then told Tiffany, the bar owner, the same thing. She said almost immediately after she told Tiffany, Keenan came over to the table.
He comes over very quickly and he's stating that he doesn't even know me. And that's when I believe Tiffany was sitting there trying to like calm him down because he again was being very aggressive. And she, at one point you can, I'm sorry.
Let me ask you, when you say he's being very aggressive, how would you describe his demeanor at that time when he approaches you, Ravon, and Tiffany over at those tables?
He's angry.
And how did you know he was angry?
You could tell by the way that his body features, he kept just going like this. Tiffany tried to calm him down. He backed up and said, "Don't fucking touch me." And...
What was the tone of his voice?
Loud.
And he indicated that at one point you heard him say, "Don't fucking touch me," to Tiffany?
Yes.
What happened next?
He looked at me and my boyfriend, Ravon, and walked away and said, "And by the way, these diamonds are real."
She said the comment about his diamond earrings was random. At no time had they been mentioned before in their interaction. After that, she said he walked away back towards where he was sitting. She then went outside on the patio to smoke a cigarette. When she came back in, she went and sat back at her table. She said she didn't see Keenan leave. But she did see him walk back into the bar. And when he did, she said she heard Big Dave tell him to never speak to her again. She said she was trying to calm Big Dave down and told him to let it go. Her boyfriend Ravon called her back to the table, and after that, she said everything happened so quickly. The argument was escalating, and their voices were getting louder. She saw Justin head over there, too.
I had no clue that he had a gun on him at all.
He did.
Keenan.
You had not seen a gun at all to that point?
No.
Even when Big Dave and him are talking?
Correct. I just know that there was a scuffle, and me and Chad were being called over by my boyfriend, Ravon, and within seconds, there was gunfire, and everybody just went to the ground, and it was just, everybody was everywhere at that point.
She said she doesn't recall Keenan ever saying anything about having left anything in the bar. After the gunshots, her boyfriend pulled her back towards the patio. Everyone was screaming, and it was mayhem. She went to see if Tiffany was okay, and that's when she saw Big Dave on the ground, bleeding. Tiffany told her that she wasn't sure if Justin was alive or not. She said she never saw Justin again. On cross-examination, Anne-Marie said she had been drinking for a majority of the evening, but that she had only had about 3 or 4 beers while they were at Papa Don's. Keenan's attorney, John Grieven, pointed out that Keenan never approached her or touched her, and she agreed. He said all Keenan said to her was, "Come here," a few times, and then, "I have a 40. He asked if anyone had ever told her that she was melodramatic, and she said no. She agreed that the "I have a 40 comment could have been referencing a gun or beer. She wasn't sure. When Keenan came back into the bar, she was right in front of him. She said she didn't hear him say anything, but she did hear Big Dave tell him not to talk to her again. Grieven pointed out that during her interview with detectives, Anne-Marie had told them that when Keenan walked in, Big Dave had asked her, "Is that the guy?" And then he said to Keenan, "Don't you ever fucking talk to her or touch her again." She agreed that that's what he said.
He doesn't say it in a nice way, is that fair?
No, he was loud about it.
Okay.
Grieven then asked her about the prosecutor's claim that Keenan wanted revenge.
Do you recall that when Mr. Ivory walks back in the bar 153, that you were standing right in front of him, correct?
Correct.
And you were standing right next to Tiffany, correct?
Correct.
So is it fair to say that Mr. Ivory's purpose in coming back was to take revenge on the people who kicked him out, namely you and Tiffany? He had an open shot from a couple feet away right at that time, didn't he?
If that's what his intentions were, then yes.
Right, but he didn't shoot at that time, did he?
Not that I recall.
Dave Wolcotti, a.k.a. Big Dave, took the stand next, and he told the court that he and his girlfriend Jennifer had gone to Papa Don's that night after going to a bar to see a band play, and then going to a bowling alley for a friend's birthday. They got to Papa Don's at about 12:30 or 1. Dave was asked when he first saw Keenan that night. He said it was when Keenan and Tiffany were talking. It was strange to him because Tiffany doesn't usually have time to sit and talk to someone for that long, since she manages the bar. As Keenan was leaving the bar, he said he saw him approach Justin and say something to him before walking out. He didn't hear or see Justin respond. He said Justin just took a swig of beer and then sat back down at the bar. He testified that he didn't know at the time that Keenan had been asked to leave. A few minutes later, he learned about what had happened with Anne-Marie, and then he saw Keenan walk back into the bar. He said Tiffany told him, "This man has to leave. He's not welcome here." So he went up to Keenan and told him that he had to leave.
At that point, do you say anything to the defendant?
I did. I said, "You're going to have to leave. Nobody wants you here. You know, you're not welcome here tonight." And that's kind of where it started.
Okay. And take me from there, or from what you remember.
A lot of it I don't recall. Bits and pieces. I do recall the conversation between him and I don't really recall.
But the exact words what was said back and forth?
Right.
Okay. So the gist of your statements to him or something like you said, like, you're not welcome here.
Those were the first words out of my mouth. I do recall that.
And did he respond to that?
He did, and it was something along the lines of, well, you know, I'm not leaving, or, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to make me leave, or what?
So confrontational?
Or? Very confrontational.
Okay. And you respond that by continuing to say, you got to go?
I just said, you know, well, honestly, I don't recall.
He said he doesn't recall seeing a gun at that point, nor recall Keenan referencing one. He also doesn't recall him saying anything about why he returned to the bar, or trying to explain anything.
I do remember a heated conversation between the two of us. I remember saying to him something about, don't go anywhere near Anne-Marie, stay away from her. You know, things, I don't recall the exact words, but.
So you referenced Anne-Marie had issues from earlier?
Yes.
Now, do you see what's happening around you at that point? Other people coming up to you?
Well, I did notice we had drawn a crowd of some sort, small crowd.
And then,
well, I do remember Justin coming up, you know, very clearly.
There would have been, you said you had your right at the bar?
Correct.
He would have come,
right.
Is he coming up to the right of you?
Correct.
And so you remember coming up, you remember anything he did?
I remember him trying to talk to Mr. Ivory, but I don't recall what the words were.
He said Justin did put his hands on Keenan, but it wasn't clear to him why he did that. He then described what happened next.
All of a sudden, like this mass of people, Mr. Ivory, Justin, myself, and Tiffany included, all just started like moving toward the door area of the bar, at which at that point I was shot in the arm, and it kind of knocked me back. And then I looked and I was like, oh my, I just got shot.
He said he doesn't recall ever putting his hands on Keenan. At that point, he said he doesn't remember doing it, but he ran across the bar and collapsed by the kitchen area. He then remembered hearing more gunshots and thinking, what the heck is going on here? He said he didn't realize it at the time, but he had been shot in the abdomen too. When he saw all the blood, he thought, this is not good. Dave rolled up his shirt sleeve and showed the jury a scar on his arm from the shooting. The bullet had entered his arm, exited his arm, and then passed through his stomach before exiting out of his lower back. He said he has a scar on his stomach, too, and showed the jury that, too. He said the doctors had to cut out 5 inches of his colon and that he was on life support for 3 days. He was in the hospital for a total of 7 days and received about 37 staples. He said part of his arm is still numb, but that he is recovered. On cross-examination, Dave admitted that he and his girlfriend had had a lot to drink that night. By the time they got to Papa Don's, they had consumed drinks at 4 other places, and they were at Papa Don's for about an hour and continued to drink. All in all, he said they drank for about 4.5 hours that night. Keenan's attorney, John Greven, brought up Dave's interview with police, from after he got out of the hospital. Dave had told them that he had, quote, lots of amnesia about that night. At the end of the interview, the officers gave him their business cards and told him to let them know if things ever started to clear up. Dave never contacted them to tell them that he now remembered certain things.
You just testified with the prosecutor, that's called direct examination. So my question is, the things that you testified to on direct examination just now are more than what the statement you gave to Sergeant Litke on November 24th of last year.
So the question is, what I...
The question is what you're testifying now today different than what you told Sergeant Litke back on November 24th?
Yes.
Okay. Is that because all of a sudden you started to remember new things?
It is.
Okay. At any time prior to your testimony, did you review with the prosecutors a copy of that videotape of the incident?
Yes.
And when would that be?
I can't give you the specific dates.
That's fine. Within the past week? Within the past 2 weeks?
Within the past couple months.
Within the past couple of months?
I honestly don't recall.
Well, there's a big difference between 3 months ago, 3 weeks ago. You would agree with that, right?
Yeah, sure.
And did you go to the prosecutor's office in preparation for trial and view the videotape?
Yes.
Let's say within the past month. Let's say.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe within the past couple of weeks?
Yes.
Okay.
Dave told the court that he also couldn't be sure where Keenan was heading towards when he first walked into the bar. To this day, he said he has no idea if Keenan's chicken wings were still sitting at the bar and if that's what Keenan was going towards. Greven again pointed out how drunk Dave was that night. "I had some drinks, yes," Dave replied. Greven then pulled out his medical records from that night, which showed that his blood alcohol level was 0.131 at 3:01 a.m., about an hour and 8 minutes after the incident happened, which was more than 1.5 times the legal limit.
So Keenan Ivory walks through this door. He is immediately confronted by an intoxicated guy at the bar. Fair?
Okay.
Okay. Not only is he confronted by this big, intoxicated guy at a bar, maybe this guy says, "Don't you ever fucking touch her or talk to her again." Right?
Maybe I do.
Okay. The phrase, "Don't you fucking ever talk to her or touch her again," talk about that phrase. Would you agree with me? It's virtually impossible to say that phrase in a pleasant way.
I would agree with you.
By the nature of the phrase, it's harsh, for lack of a better phrase. Fair?
Yes.
Greven asked if Dave remembers Keenan stepping back and putting his hands up. He said he doesn't recall that, and he doesn't believe the video shows that. Greven then played the video again. In the video, Dave approaches Keenan, and they are looking at each other. Despite the fact that you can't hear anything on the tape due to the loud music, Dave agreed that this is likely where their conversation begins. That's when Tiffany then comes over and steps in between the two men.
You see Tiffany step in between you and Keenan?
Yes.
You would agree with me that when Tiffany steps in to separate you two, she faces you, correct?
Yes.
And she puts her arms up to you, correct?
Yes.
In the video, then, Keenan takes a couple steps back and puts his hands up. Dave admits that he didn't remember that. When asked if he remembers saying to Keenan, "If you don't leave, I'm going to kick your black ass," he said no. Courtney Jewart, a bartender who was working at Papa Don's that night, testified that she had seen Keenan come into the bar before, probably about 5 or 6 times. She said on November 15th, he was there by himself. He was sitting at the corner of the bar when 3 females came in and sat with him. She said at 12:37 a.m., he ordered 12 chicken wings and 3 shots. He took 1 shot and gave 2 to 2 of the girls who were seated next to him. He then briefly left the bar and returned a few minutes later, right when the wings were ready. She described seeing him by the jukebox that night. She said he grabbed her shoulder as she was walking by and asked if she knew about a song he was looking for. She told him, "Please don't touch me, and we don't have rap on our jukebox," and walked away. She said she noticed some sort of conflict between him and Anne-Marie a little after that. She noticed it because Anne-Marie asked if she could walk behind the bar because she didn't feel comfortable walking past Keenan. Courtney said she was standing by the bar when she heard Tiffany say, "It's time to go," to Keenan.
"I heard it's time to go. Then it goes back to, then I was walking back over. Something, he was given a box for his wings. He said, I don't want these fucking wings, and push them across the bar. And then I walked."
She said after he shoved the wings down the bar and left, they cleaned up his play setting and threw out the wings. Dave Wolcotti's girlfriend, Jennifer, testified that she doesn't have a clear memory of the night in question. She said she remembers hearing gunshots at Papa Don's and saw that Dave was hurt. She tried to see if she could help him. She told him he was going to be okay and that help was on the way. It wasn't until a few minutes later that she realized that she had also been shot in her left arm. But she was more focused on Dave. He was bleeding a lot. Jennifer lifted up her sleeve to show the jury the scar on her arm from where the bullet went in and then where it exited on her upper arm. She said it took a few months for the wound to close up. The pain and stiffness was there for a few months, but is okay now. She was told that her blood alcohol level that night was 0.32, which she said is likely why she doesn't remember much from the night. We'll get into more trial testimony right after this quick break from today's sponsors. Handy is the easy and convenient way to book home cleanings. Handy lets you compare profiles and read real customer reviews, then book on your schedule right from the app or website. All of Handy's services are backed by the Handy Happiness Guarantee, and all pros on Handy are background checked, which you can learn more about at handy.com. Plus, with Handy's clear upfront pricing, what you see is what you pay. And you can pay securely on the app. No need to worry about cash or checks. I've been using Handy for a few months now, and the last time I had a cleaner come out was about a month ago. Sometimes I just don't have the time to clean the house the way I'd like to, so Handy came to my rescue. Booking our cleaner was super easy. I just went to the website, entered my zip code and what kind of house I have, selected the day and times that work best for me, and voila. And our cleaner was awesome. She cleaned our living room, the bathrooms, and our kitchen, and each room was virtually spotless when she left. To get your first 3-hour cleaning for $39 when you sign up for a plan, visit handy.com/junkie and use promo code junkie during checkout. That's handy.com/junkie and use promo code junkie during checkout to get your first 3-hour cleaning for $39 once you sign up for a plan. Recurring charge terms and conditions apply. Visit handy.com to learn more. The original True Body Bra by TrueAndCo.com is the bra women are talking about. Over 500,000 women, including myself, have bought it and swear by it. And before I tell you more, I just have to tell you that I am obsessed with these bras from True & Co. I have no idea how they do it, but they're amazing. You won't believe how good the True Body bra looks when you put it on. The buttery soft fabric smooths you out in all the right places, and it has no wires, so it's super comfortable. But unlike other wire-free bras, the original True Body bra is made with proprietary fabric that still gives you the support you need. It took over 6 years of collecting data from 7 million women to make this game-changing bra, so it's no surprise that TrueAndCo.com has sold over 500,000 of the original True Body bras. It just goes to show that great things can happen when women come together. The Today Show calls it game-changing, and Good Housekeeping says it's the ultimate lounge bra. And me, Jillian from Court Junkie, says that it is such an amazing bra that you'll forget that you even have it on. I have two of these bras, and I'm not kidding when I tell you that they are my absolute favorite. They're so comfortable and yet so supportive at the same time, they kind of defy logic. You can try the original True Body Bra from True & Co. today with free and easy returns. And save 15% now when you go to trueandco.com/junkie and enter the code JUNKIE. That's trueandco.com/junkie. Seriously, I love these bras. And now, back to the trial testimony. The police officers involved in Keenan's arrest also testified at his trial. They all told the jury that Keenan had been resisting at the time of his arrest and that he refused to comply with their demands to see his hands, even after the canine bit him. Detective Todd Sinsley said that the officers were concerned that Keenan was still armed. That's why they kept shouting at him to show them his hands. He said when he approached Keenan, he kicked him in the face, put his knee on his back, and delivered several additional blows to his face and back of his head to try and subdue him. He searched Keenan afterwards and found a large wad of money in his right front pocket, along with a cell phone. Thomas Russell, another Akron police officer who was an off-duty patron at Papa Don's the night of November 15th, testified that he was sitting at the bar when the shooting occurred. He said he saw Big Dave go down and asked him if he was okay. He said Dave responded, "Fuck no, I just got shot." He said he remained at the scene until around 5 a.m. After he finally got home, he started undressing when he noticed that his side was burning. He looked in the mirror and he could see that he had been grazed by a bullet. He got in his car and drove back to the scene to tell the officers that he, too, had been shot. Two women who had been seated at the bar next to Keenan that night testified that he had tried hitting on them, but that they rejected his advances. Natalie Lynn said that Keenan was sitting at the bar on the other side of her friend Jody. She said he kept rubbing Jody's back and asking them if they wanted food or a drink, and they said no. She said she told him to stop touching Jody. Jody then turned her back towards him so she could avoid him. She said Keenan appeared to be intoxicated, and she watched as he hit on a lot of girls, including Anne Marie.
And what is the defendant's reaction when Anne Marie says something back to him?
He gets angry, says that he has authority, starts kind of laughing. No one really knows what he's talking about at this point, and he just keeps saying it over to himself. No one's really paying attention to him at this point.
Saying what to himself?
I got authority.
She said she never saw a gun on him that night, but that after the shooting, she went up to Anne Marie and told her how she had heard Keenan say, "I have a 40," and that now she realized he was talking about having a gun. David Eisel, the other man involved in the fight with Keenan, Big Dave, and Justin after Keenan returned to the bar, testified about what he says happened that night. He said he saw Keenan leave, and then a few minutes later, come back inside the bar. He said he was about 15 to 20 feet away when Tiffany confronted him and they started arguing. He said Keenan kept fidgeting with his right side, and that's when he saw the gun. He said he asked his friend, "Is that a phone or a gun?" He said as he kept watching, he could clearly see that it was a gun. Keenan kept patting it. Justin went over there and confronted him too. They got closer and closer to each other, so David walked over. By the time he reached them, he said Keenan had the gun in his right hand. He said he then grabbed Keenan's arm and they started shoving him. He described it as almost like a big dog pile. He said he remembers falling down by the front door and then hearing gunshots. He said he got up and ran outside after Justin had pushed himself and Keenan out of the bar. He found Justin lying on the ground. He said he wasn't conscious and was making what sounded like a snoring noise. Later, after he was interviewed by police at the bar, he went over to a friend's house and someone pointed out that there was a hole in his jacket. He hadn't noticed it before. On cross-examination, David said that after Keenan left the bar, he talked to Justin and that Justin didn't say anything about him. He said that when Keenan left, he walked out calmly. Keenan's attorney played the surveillance video again and asked David to explain what they were seeing during the confrontation.
At this point in time, Mr. Heisel, is it fair to say that you were right about there? Is that correct, sir?
Yes.
All right. So you're on Mr. Ivory's right, correct?
Yes.
And who is to Mr. Ivory's front?
Big Dave.
All right. And who would be to his left?
Justin.
All right. And what is to his back?
Wall puzzling.
Okay. So, is it fair to say at that point in time, have any shots been fired?
No.
Is there any yelling or screaming?
Not that I can hear.
All right. And is it fair to say at that point in time that Mr. Ivory is surrounded?
I would say so.
So is it safe to say, Mr. Isel, that you grab Mr. Ivory along with maybe some pushing or shoving from Mr. Weinbrenner or Mr. Wakady? You pull him back, you hear a yell, then you hear the first shots. Is that a fair statement, sir? All right.
Jeff Bates was the barback at Papa Don's that night. He said he heard what Keenan said to Justin as he was leaving the bar.
He slowly made his way out. He stopped where Justin was sitting, and he said two or three times that I will smack that bitch up close to Justin in his ear.
And what did Justin do as far as reacting to that?
He just kind of ignored it to not make the situation any worse.
And what happened with Keenan Ivory then?
He slowly made his way towards the door. Before he left the door, he turned around and looked around, and then he left.
On cross-examination, Keenan's attorney pointed out that Jeff never told the detectives when he was interviewed that he heard Keenan say that he would slap that bitch. Jeff replied that his adrenaline was pumping at the time, so he said he isn't sure. But he said he did tell them in his second interview 2 weeks later. Assistant Summit County Medical Examiner Dr. Dorothy Dean testified about Justin's injuries. She said he was shot two times in his torso, one in the chest and another in his abdomen. Both gunshots were fatal, although the first one would have caused his death more rapidly. Other injuries on him included fresh scrapes on the fronts of his knees. He had no drugs in his system, but his blood alcohol level was 0.139. Sergeant Scott Litke testified about a brief conversation he had with Keenan after the shooting at the hospital. He read him his Miranda rights and then began asking questions.
I asked him if he was at Papa Don's bar, and I believe it was, and I don't remember the exact word of the question. But he had agreed to it being in some sort of squabble at the bar. My next question was, what kind of gun did you have? And at that point, he asked for his attorney, and the questioning ceased.
He testified that Keenan had four cell phones at the time of his arrest. Two were in his vehicle, one was in his pants pocket, and another one was found underneath him as he lay in the fields. They pulled Keenan's phone records and discovered that after the shooting, he made several outgoing calls to a phone number that was later identified as belonging to his live-in girlfriend and mother of his children, Kimberly. As part of their investigation, they learned that Keenan had mentioned that he had a 40 at the bar earlier that night, and so they looked into whether he had that gun on him at the bar prior to the shooting. Sergeant Litke said that Keenan did not appear to have a gun when he was originally at the bar.
When you watch the video at specific points, there's a specific point where he first is encountering Tiffany Miller when the argument at the genesis of this first starts, and she asks him to go to the end of the bar, where he pulls his pants up and the waistband becomes visible, and the gun is not visible at that point. Also, there's a point where he's at the jukebox for a significant amount of time with his right side directly facing the video camera. And no lump, bulge, or anything that would make me believe that there was a gun present is visible.
He said no witnesses reported seeing a gun during those times either. And he said Tiffany told him in his second interview with her that when Keenan came back, he made reference to not being alone anymore, which to him suggested that things had changed. Sergeant Litke said that no one reported that Keenan ever made mention of chicken wings when he came back. In fact, he said Courtney, who was one of three sober witnesses that night, had told them that Keenan had remarked that he didn't want the fucking wings. He said he put that tidbit in his report to show that Keenan was clearly upset at the time, but that he didn't know that the chicken wings were going to come back up in the case. He said the Akron Police Department sent the surveillance video to be enhanced, but that even with the enhanced video, the audio inside the bar still wasn't helpful. With regard to specific statements made by Keenan, he said they were unable to determine from the video if anything was said. The advanced video stills from the parking lot were then shown to the jury. In them is a close-up view of Keenan sitting in the front seat of his car from right before he re-enters the bar. Sergeant Litke explains that at 1:52:25 a.m., there is movement of Keenan's right arm towards the passenger seat glove box area. At 1:52:31, he says Keenan gets out of the vehicle and appears to put an object consistent with the size, shape, and color of a gun in his waistband on his right side. The state also introduced evidence of Keenan's prior criminal history. In 2008 and in 2011, he had been convicted of various drug charges, and therefore, by law, he wasn't allowed to own a gun. And then the state rested. The defense called just one witness to the stand, and that witness was Keenan Ivory. Keenan told the jury about his two children, two little boys, and said that he grew up with two brothers and one sister. His mom worked for the public school system, and his father was a firefighter. He said his youngest brother passed away in 2011. He was murdered, and to this day, it is still unsolved. He admitted that due to his felony convictions in 2008 and 2011, he was not allowed to have a weapon, and said he's guilty of that. On November 15, 2014, he said he attended a fundraiser for his son's football team. They were trying to raise money so they could go to Florida for the championships. He went there by himself, but his girlfriend and his girlfriend's parents were there too. He said he saw Tiffany Miller at the fundraiser. He goes to Papa Don's and knows her from there. There was a man with her, but he didn't know who that man was. He said he nodded his head at her. The fundraiser lasted until about 11 or 11:30, and then he headed over to Papa Don's. He said he goes there regularly for football games and to eat food. He said they have good food and good TVs. He said that while he was at the fundraiser, his gun was in the trunk of his car. He didn't bring it into the fundraiser because he figured there were families there and coaches, and he wouldn't need it.
Why do you have a weapon anyway, even though you know that it's illegal for you to have a weapon?
For personal protection, because my brother was murdered in 2011, I've been robbed two times. That's it.
He said after he left the fundraiser, he put the gun on his person. He got to Papa Don's around 12:15 or 12:30. He said he was in a great mood because his son's team was doing so well, and going to Florida was great. They had been the worst team the year prior. He sat down, ordered his usual order of wings, a drink, and then he left and went to the store to get some tobacco. He returned to the bar about 15 minutes later. It was perfect timing. The wings had just come out. He said there were a few females sitting to his left and they had a conversation. He asked if they wanted drinks. One told them it was her birthday, so he bought them a couple. For the next 15 to 20 minutes, he sat there and talked to people. He didn't know very many people in the bar. He then saw Anne Marie, whom he did not know, and called out to her to come over to him a few times. She told him to stop asking and then said she was going to tell her boyfriend, who was right over there. He said she was being dramatic about it. He said he responded by telling her that he had a 40 on him. He said he was referencing his gun. She ran behind the bar and he saw her stop at a table with the black male, and she started pointing over at him, so he walked over to make sure everything was cool. When he got there, he talked to Tiffany. He said Tiffany told him that Anne-Marie said he called her a bitch, and he told her that he didn't even know her enough to call her a name. Tiffany wanted to talk to him in the back. He said he never got aggressive with either woman. He complied with Tiffany's request to talk in the back. He said he brought up the fundraiser, saying that they had just had fun there, and he stated that he liked the bar and wouldn't do anything like that. But she told him that she believes Anne-Marie and doesn't like people disrespecting her customers. She then asked him to leave. He said he was shocked and disappointed. He had never had trouble there before and had been there numerous times. Keenan told Tiffany that he had gotten wings and would need a box for them. Tiffany said all right. He went back to the bar and waited for his tab. He said he didn't know that Tiffany was a manager or that she was the daughter of the owners. He thought she was a bartender who had some authority. He said he was not cursing or swearing at any point in time. He paid his tab and he left. He said he was still shocked and confused. He had never been put out of a bar before, especially one that he liked. He was asked if he spoke to anyone as he was leaving. He said he did talk to someone who he later learned was Justin Weinbrenner, but he contradicted the earlier testimony from Jeff, the barback, about what was said. He said he recognized Justin as being the guy who had been with Tiffany at the fundraiser, so he stopped by and said, "Hey, I was at the fundraiser earlier too, and since you've been sitting here, did you hear me call anyone a bitch?" He said Justin said nah, and that was it. That was the first time he spoke to Justin. He said he didn't know him and wasn't threatening him at all. He then left the bar, got into his car, and started heading home. He got about a mile away when he realized that he forgot his food at the bar, so he turned around and headed back.
When you left the bar, were your wings still on the bar?
Correct.
To the best of your knowledge, when you walked out the door, were the wings still on the bar?
Yes.
Did you have any reason to believe when you drove away that your wings had been removed?
No.
So you're sitting in the light and say, "Oh, forgot my wings. I'm going to go back in."
Correct.
He said he parked his car and took out one of his cell phones, which had been sitting on the front passenger seat of his car, and put it in his right front pocket. When asked why he had so many phones, he said because they were cheap, and once the minutes ran out, he was going to give them to the kids. He then went back inside the bar. He said he wasn't looking for trouble. He was just hoping his wings were still there. His weapon was still on him, on the right side, covered up by his shirt, as he said it had been all night. He described what happened once he got inside, as his attorney played the surveillance video for him. As soon as he entered the bar, he headed to the left, where his wings were. There was a big man, who he later came to know as Big Dave, Dave Wolcotti, in his way. Dave confronted him and said, "Don't touch her or talk to her again, or I'll kick your black ass." He said he didn't know what he was talking about. He said Dave was big, and so he stepped back and just said, "Bro, bro," a few times. Tiffany then stepped in between them, her back to him and facing Dave. He said Dave was being hostile and Tiffany was trying to calm him down. At one point, he said he lifted up his jacket. He said he did that to show Dave that he had a weapon on him, that he didn't want to mess with him. He said he didn't think that Dave saw it. When asked what type of condition Dave was in, he said he was kind of slurring his words. Keenan said he backed up again and said he didn't want any problems. He lifted up his coat two more times to show off his gun. He had not pulled it at this point. At one point on the video, Keenan raises his right arm. His attorney asked why he did that, and he said he was pointing towards the bar where his wings were. Dave was still in front of him. He starts heading to the bar while trying to get some distance between himself and Dave. He said he was focused on Dave, and that he didn't notice Justin leaving his seat at the bar and coming over to him. This was on his left side. Justin then physically touches him. His arms are out in front of him. He touches Keenan's waist. But Keenan said he's still focused on Dave at this point. Another man, David Eisel, starts moving in. He can't recall if anything was being said. He was focused on Big Dave, and now this other guy was coming up on his left, who he didn't even know. He said he's now afraid. He's boxed in. At 1:53:52, he said he was forced backwards. Justin was pushing him, and David Eisel was now grabbing him too. At 1:53:53, David Eisel has grabbed him and is throwing him back, and he's going over a table. It is now when he pulls his weapon. He said he thought they were going to kill him. At 1:53:54, he is off balance and falling backwards. David Eisel still has his hands on him. At 1:53:55, he is still falling backwards. He is then partially out the front door. There's a scream that can then be heard on the video. Keenan says that's his own scream as he's falling over the table. He said he feels hands going for his weapon, and when he starts falling, that's when he was really fearing for his life. Shots are then fired, and then more shots. He fell outside, the gun flew out of his hand, and he took off running. He was asked why he ran.
My gun fell out of my hand, and I was scared. They'd pick it up and shoot me back.
He said he didn't know where he was going. He was still afraid.
So is it fair to say that you've been afraid from the moment you were surrounded by three big white guys with your back to a wall?
Yes.
And that continued, is that correct?
Yes.
Does it continue while you're still running?
Yes.
He ran to a field and laid down. He couldn't run anymore and his leg was hurting. When he had hit the ground outside, his knee got hurt. He said he had bruises everywhere. He called his girlfriend to see if she could come get him because he was so scared.
At this point in time, do you know that a police officer has been shot?
No.
Do you know if anybody's been shot?
No.
About 20 minutes went by and he saw a bright light. He could hear police officers ordering him to see his hands, but he said his hands were already out. He was lying in a plain position, his hands out away from his sides. He said he got a couple dog bites in his hands too. He is scared of dogs, and he felt the dog biting him for a while. He was too scared to say anything. Afterwards, the officers had told him that he shot a cop, and that's the first time he knew that. He was then put into an ambulance. He said he stayed in the hospital for 2 days as a result of the dog bites. He told the jury that he never intended on hurting anyone that night. On cross-examination, Keenan said he has carried a gun ever since his brother was murdered, but the prosecutor pointed out that he was arrested for having a firearm in January of 2011 and that his brother wasn't murdered until December of that year. He said that the weapon wasn't on his person when he was arrested then. It was at his house. The prosecutor said there were three females he interacted with when he first arrived at Papa Don's. One girl was named Jackie. The prosecutor said that on direct testimony, Keenan had said he left the bar briefly to go get some tobacco, but he was asked if, in fact, he went to go get heroin for Jackie. Keenan said no. Jackie and her friends were still there when he returned. He bought them shots, and they left around 1:16 a.m. He was asked if he was disappointed that they left after he bought them shots, and he said no. After they left, he went by the jukebox, where he admitted to rubbing the bartender Courtney's arm, but he said it was just a friendly gesture. He was happy about his son's team. He said she never told him not to touch her. As for Anne-Marie, he said it didn't bother him that she ran behind the bar to avoid him, and he maintained that he wasn't agitated during his conversation with Tiffany, and he wasn't agitated when he spoke to Justin either. The prosecutor asked what he put into his waistband when he got out of his car in the parking lot, right before he re-entered the bar. He said it was his flip phone and that it was open, which is why it looked longer. He was asked if he thought that everyone would be fine if he walked back in after having been kicked out. He said he thought they would be fine with him just getting his food. And he said he never made the comment that he didn't want the fucking wings. He was asked if the bartender had been lying about that, and he said yes. The prosecutor then challenged him on how he thought he would be de-escalating the situation with Dave by showing off his gun.
Do you truly think that by showing in a bar at 2 in the morning that you have a gun, that that's going to calm the situation?
No, I said I did that because I didn't want any problems.
You didn't want any problems? You didn't think that's going to cause problems, showing a firearm in your light waistband after being removed from this bar? You didn't think that that was going to cause any problems?
Well, he threatened me.
I'm asking you, you didn't think that was going to cause any problems?
No.
Okay.
Now
that's your answer. It's not going to cause any problem to show loaded a firearm when you're getting into an argument with a person at a bar at 1:53 in the morning after you've been kicked out of that bar.
Keenan told the court that he never said, "I'm not alone anymore," when he re-entered the bar, as Tiffany had testified. He was asked why he didn't just leave after the men had approached him.
You can leave right there, right? At 1:53:12, nothing is stopping you from going out that door, is it?
No.
So you chose not to leave, is that correct?
I didn't choose not to leave.
You had the freedom to leave.
I just wanted my wings.
You chose, and at this point, you think you're still going to get your wings?
I always go there. I didn't feel it was a problem. I didn't come
here. But there's a problem now, according to your own testimony. There is a problem now. It is such a problem that you're showing a gun in your waistband, and you choose to stay there and not go out that door. Is that correct?
And I also kind of step away from Dave to create some space.
So you choose to stay in that bar and not go out that door at 1:53:12?
Yes.
The prosecutor said the reason why the men surrounded him was because they saw that he had a gun. He asked Keenan if he accepted responsibility for anything that happened.
You've created a situation here, haven't you, Mr. Ivory?
No. I didn't put my hands on nobody.
You brought a loaded gun into a bar at 1:53 in the morning and started showing it to people. Is that in any way, are you responsible at all for causing a situation by doing that?
No.
Okay.
Well, Cody was threatening me. I didn't say anything to Ivory. He put his hands on me first. That's his fault.
Keenan said that David Eisel reached for his gun. He said he drew his gun to keep him from getting it. This was at the same time they were pushing him. As for why he shot the gun, he said he wasn't aiming, and as he was falling to the ground, the gun went off. The prosecutor challenged him on that.
So they're going to kill you because you've been kicked out of this bar.
They're trying to take my weapon. I don't know what's on their mind.
When you did, you said, I think they're going to take it and kill me over this problem that lasted for a second.
He already put his hands on you. I didn't shoot.
But you're saying kill you. They're going to take this gun and kill you?
Yeah. I would never do that. No, I was scared.
People get kicked out of the bar every weekend, don't they?
I guess.
Have you ever heard of anyone pop a gun being shot in the head because they got kicked out of the bar?
I didn't mean it. I wasn't trying to shoot anyone. I was scared. Flat out scared. That's all, man. There wasn't no intention for anything or nothing. I was scared.
After Keenan's testimony, the defense then rested. Keenan Ivory was found guilty of aggravated murder and was sentenced to life in prison without parole, plus an extra 65 years. As the judge in the case told him right after he was sentenced, he will die in prison. The judge also said of the victims who had been shot, quote, "They each had a brush with death that night. They survived. One did not. Justin laid down his life for his friends." According to Justin's obituary, November 15th, 2014, wasn't the first time that he had saved someone's life. Among his accomplishments while on the Akron Police Department were commendations for breaking up a burglary ring and for bravely pulling a man from a burning car before it exploded. His obituary also states that his most joyous duty, however, was that of devoted father to his young daughter. And that's all for this episode. I would love to know your thoughts. Do you think Keenan should have been convicted of aggravated murder? Or did you believe that he was acting in self-defense, as he claimed? Let me know by tweeting me at CourtJunkiePod or by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. As always, if you'd like to hear these episodes early and ad-free, please consider going to courtjunkie.com/support. That will redirect you to my Patreon page where you can sign up for as little as $1 a month. You'll also be supporting my work on this podcast. And just a reminder, over 500,000 women swear by the original True Body Bra by trueandco.com. The True Body Bra looks amazing when you put it on, with soft fabric that smooths you out in all the right places, while still giving you the support you need. The best part? It has no wires, so it's super comfortable for all-day wear. Try the original True Body Bra from True & Co. today with free and easy returns, and save 15% now when you go to trueandco.com/junkie and enter the code JUNKIE. That's trueandco.com/junkie. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.